that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and joining me from the Two Daft Yank Polar Studios is my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
No. Ben Hammam, make that Euros. We can't use Deutschmarks anymore. Didn't you listen to the show last week? We can't use Deutschmarks. Yeah, Euros. Euros!
Corey.
How's it going, everybody? Yeah, sorry, I was working out a last-minute quote-unquote sponsorship deal with Qatar there. How's everybody doing today?
We're doing fine, Mr. Corey. We are excited here. We are talking in the aftermath of the USA's 2-1 victory over Turkey today. And we are going to talk about some of the bigger issues here involving the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, it's 2-1 win over Turkey. That's like a 4-0 win over roast beef, right?
Yeah, so it is a Turkish delight, so to say.
Yeah.
And before we get into the rundown here, we got site news that we got to get to.
Yeah, self-promotion.
All right, yes, because no one else is going to do it. And we haven't done this in a while, so let's just get to the site news to keep everybody updated of what's going on with 2daftyanks.com, your one-stop source to find all the musings from Corey and I. First off is, this is now June, believe it or not, and May saw us break yet another traffic record. So thank you for everyone. Like, every month we beat the previous record, but this one we beat it, like, with a week ago. And so this all other week was extra gravy, and it's because of this World Cup excitement, I'm sure, is what is causing this to happen. So thank you for checking out the website. And just please remember, since there's so many new people listening now, you can listen to Two Daft Yanks on your mobile device, on TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, or the podcatcher of your choice on your phone, via our RSS feed, which you can find at 2daftyanks.com.
Yeah, and as a public disclaimer, you got to be a little more careful when you use the word gravy around a Cajun. I got excited there for a second.
Whew. Sorry about that.
Yes, yeah, I like using gravy.
There'll be no Cajun trimmings today.
Yeah.
No boudin balls for you.
Oh, see, there you go again, getting me all excited.
And here's another thing, Corey. No, this is great. Now, this I haven't told you about. Even Corey doesn't know about this. But today, in preparation for the World Cup, I have landed us, the Two Daft Yanks, a partnership, Corey.
Uh-oh.
With soccer kit supplier Admiral.
Huh.
You've heard of Admiral. I'm sure you have. They make kits.
Yes.
And so now for you Two Daft Yank enthusiasts, you can go to tdy.com and get a custom code there that we have just for you that will get you 10% off Admiral soccer gear, and they have all kinds of customizable training wear that is reasonably priced. It's not like, you know, your Nike or your Adidas where you're going to pay, you know, $80, $90 just for a regular training shirt. They have training shirts there in all kinds of different colors and styles for your team for just around $20 to $30 a piece.
Yeah, which nowadays you can't hardly find anything, especially jersey or shirt wear, you know, anything worth a dang that's, you know, not going to cost you at least $30.
Yeah, and they also have some World Cup themed gear. So please check that out. Click on the link to be able to use that code, and it's right on the side panel of TDY.com. But here's the big news, Corey.
Whoa,
you could use that 10% off. And you can get something that I know you've been looking for, because Admiral is the official kit supplier for many of the lower-level teams in the United States, including your hometown, New Orleans Jesters.
Man, I'm online buying one as soon as we finish the show.
They have New Orleans Jesters kits on there.
Man, get me sport me some weird purple and green kits.
So there we go. So I know you'd be excited for that. So yeah. All right. Come round on, of Justin. Applause for Admiral Stalker. Check him out on the website.
All right.
Let's keep going.
Wait, one more aside, yeah, real quick. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned New Orleans Jesters, we technically put one of the our opponents out of business after an 8-1 defeat a few weeks ago.
And who would that be?
Pensacola City FC. We beat them 8-1, and then they promptly folded 2 weeks later.
Okay, I heard that they folded.
Yeah. So, yeah, just making a joke. We'd get beat by the Jesters and fold 2 weeks later. That's our motto.
Can we get the Jesters to play Manchester United in a friendly?
Cool. Manchester United doesn't want anything of the Jesters, son. Jesters to the top!
All right. So, obviously, there's a lot to talk about. We have, you know, the MLS is becoming a retirement home again for aging European players.
Yeah, come on over, Lamps.
And we have, another FIFA scandal, God forbid. But we're going to talk U.S. men's national team, and we're going to get to some of the big issues here. So, all right. So let's get the crowd fired up. This has officially been the longest intro in the history of TDY.
Yeah. This is breaking records.
Yeah, we're breaking records in a bad way. So for all three people of you who are still listening at this point, thank you. All right, the United States is 2-0 in the first two games of their send-off series, defeating Azerbaijan midweek in San Francisco, and then beating Turkey today in New York. Or actually, it was in New Jersey, really.
Yeah, Harrison.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's get into some of the issues that are around the team so far, Corey. And the biggest one, which people are talking about, is the use of the 4-4-2 diamond by Jurgen Klinsmann, which is something that we have adopted not too long ago. And a lot of people are asking, is this really going to be our formation that we're going to use in the World Cup? Where do you stand on this issue?
Well, as we'll get into later with a little bit of a tactical breakdown with formations and stuff, I'm kind of indifferent or ambivalent, whatever the correct word is, when it comes to formations. I'm neither for nor against it because, like I said, as we'll talk about later, formations are basically just a starting point, and it's, you know, how you adjust to the in-game tactics, whether they work or not. But I do think trying to speculate inside of Klinsmann's head that I think he's switching to the 4-4-2 going into the World Cup because it's going to give us a better platform to stay a little more compact, you know, because it's just naturally, all your midfielders are more naturally centralized. Plus, I think it's going to give us a little bit of a impetus to play on the counter because it allows Bradley to kind of stay a little forward without, you know, bombing too far forward. So, yeah, like I said, that's my two reasons why I think we're moving towards that diamond.
Okay, I could give you one reason why this is going to happen. And a lot of people are complaining, saying, oh, we haven't had time to perfect this. Well, who does? National teams, you don't have time to perfect formations and tactics because you just don't have enough time to train. And that's why in the end, really, it's how a team works together and a team's talent is what puts you over the top. But my main point here is, remember that before this switch was made to the 4-4-2 diamond, Klinsmann sacked his assistant manager and longtime friend in Martin Vazquez, and it was over tactical issues. So that tells you all you need to know. He sacked a guy who's been with him pretty much everywhere, and I think that was the main disagreement. He wasn't on board with the switch, and so Klinsmann got rid of him to be able to proceed with this. I think that's how I read into this situation.
You know, and that makes a lot of sense, too. I just meant that I think that's why Klinsmann wants to go to that particular formation, though. But yeah, that, like you said, that makes perfect sense because, in retrospect, maybe that was the actual rumblings inside the camp last year and not the, you know, the fitness apocalypse that was made out to be, you know, by the likes of Jeff Carlisle and those guys.
Mm-hmm. So you already kind of tipped this off. Really, when you're talking about formations are really kind of overvalued, because a formation is just a starting point. And as you said, you have to adjust in your in-game tactics to how the game flow goes. So are the likes of Alexi Lawless and Taylor Twellman, who are bashing on and on about this 4-4-2 diamond, are they being unfairly criticizing Klinsmann in this case?
Yes, or mainly yes. I mean, obviously, both Twellman and Lawless personally, or, you know, their own personal reporting style, both of them kind of like to play that constant contrarian type of style. You know, whatever is implemented, however successful it is, it's going to be, they're kind of in that camp that they're going to forever be, you know, whether pointing out there's always something to fix, which, you know, is obviously true. But yeah, I do think it's a little, I think the criticism is a little overplayed, because, as you just said, formations are basically a starting point. You have to adjust. It's not some, you know, and obviously anybody who's played soccer for longer than 15 minutes knows that formations aren't static, and especially against the likes of Portugal, Germany, Ghana, which are going to have really athletic players and that are going to have constant runs both on and off the ball, your formations are going to be, and especially from a defensive position, your position is going to have to be much more fluid anyway. So a lot of times, and as much as we knock it when people do it, this is why sometimes the likes of Chelsea and Crystal Palace, etc., end up playing six at the back when they don't have the ball, because they're just trying to cover all these possible running lanes, especially when you're getting players that run from deep. So like I said, I don't want to sound like a lemming, but yeah, formations are always overplayed, because like we said, that they're just starting points, and it's all about making adjustments to the runs and the tactics that your opponents are implementing too. So like I said, I do think that is one of the main reasons why Klinsmann wants to go to this diamond formation, is because it's going to keep us more naturally defensive, a more natural defensive shape.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now here, my next question then would be, in this diamond, do you think that it is a waste of Michael Bradley's skills when he's at the top of the diamond in that more attacking role? Now, obviously today he did a great job supplying that pass to Fabian Johnson for the goal, which was sublime. But it seems to me that he's not involved in the game as much as he was when we were playing that 4-2-3-1, to where he could really, you know, dictate the play and the tempo of the game.
Yeah, no, and that's definitely something that you're gonna see more often, that we use this, because, as you said, he's gonna be a little more forward, so he's gonna be reliant on a little bit more of service to him rather than getting the ball deeper in the midfield. Because yeah, I do think part of the reason, or the main reason why he's playing at the top of the diamond, is because Donovan isn't on the team. Because personally, as you kind of alluded to, I think his more natural position...
Whoa.
I already set it off, didn't I?
You set off, that is the you-know-who gong?
Yeah.
We were going to get to this later, but you jumped the gun. We are not mentioning
that self-caution.
Name. Yes, that is a yellow card.
Start the fine jar.
There is now a TDY fine jar. Anytime you mention you know who, you will be fined $20, which will go into an account, which will be used for a massive kegger or something when next we are in the same city.
Yeah, or trying to bribe FIFA officials for the next World Cup.
Yes. So, you know who will not be talked about, and we'll get into that later. So,
right.
Please do not speak about you know who. He is not on the squad. All right, let me hit the gong one more time, and you may continue your point.
Whew, okay. So, yeah, Michael, I do think Bradley's natural or his best position it would be to play a little deeper, probably in the position where Zusi's playing. But because you know who isn't on the roster, he is at the top of the diamond. So, like, I guess I would say his talent isn't completely wasted in that spot because he does have a pretty decent little shot on him, and I think that's why he's going to be playing at the top of the diamond is to, you know, if we're chasing a result, Bradley can pop up in those areas in and outside the box and, you know, take those pop shots from, like, 25 yards.
No, and I agree. And one thing that Taylor Twellman actually did talk about and get correct for once in his analysis was a big thing for us down in Brazil was going to be how we transition between offense and defense. And the way I view it, this 4-4-2 is flexible because without the ball, Bradley can drop deeper. Dempsey could drop deeper like he usually does. And we could take more of the shape of a 4-2-3-1 without the ball. But with the ball, then we're able to shift forward into a more attacking mode to where, you know, your two wide players, which were Davis and Zusi today, you know, tuck inside. The fullbacks can overlap them. You got Bradley pushing forward. You got Dempsey moving up there without the door. And that puts a lot of pressure on the defense because they're not exactly sure where these guys are going to pop up. So I think if we can really iron that out against Nigeria to where we're a little more fluid in there and Bradley can drop deeper and, you know, implement some attacks and then make a run forward, that's going to make us pretty dangerous on the counter.
Yeah, because also having Dempsey, be able to drop a little deeper without the ball, it's going to be able to allow him to press that initial outlet pass coming out of defense because a lot of popular tactic or one of the popular tactics with a lot of coaches these days is to have that your deepest midfielder start really deep and receive that initial pass out of defense. So if the likes of Portugal, which usually has a kind of a ball playing deeper midfield, tries to do that, it's going to allow Dempsey and both, you know, and out the door too, because as much as Josie gets flack for not scoring, he's done pretty well the last couple matches, being a little bit of a guy who actually chases down defenders and wins free kicks and wins the ball back. So like I said, it's going to allow both Dempsey and Altidore to be able to drop, you know, obviously to whatever side that outlet goes to be able to press that short initial pass out of defense and then, you know, maybe force the goalie to start playing longer balls, which, you know, hopefully our taller guys can win and then, you know, obviously thus win us a little bit more possession.
Mm-hmm. All right, now the next point I want to get to with this diamond, and there's only one answer in my head to why this is happening, and we'll see what you say. And that is, in this formation, Klinsmann has gone with something that he's gone with in the past, and he's electing to play inverted fullbacks, which is something you don't see very often. So we have a right footer on the left side and a left footer on the right side in Fabian Johnson, who's played all his games until the last two on the left side, either as a defender or a midfield. And then we have Timothy Chandler playing on the left side when he's a naturally right fullback. So what is there a tactical reason behind this, do you think, in Klinsmann's mind, knowing that really nobody could get into Klinsmann's mind because, I mean, that's why we hired him, as you said, to think out the box. So is this idea too outside of the box?
Yeah, now this one, this one I'm not really sure what the thinking is because, inverted wingers are one thing because, you know, you're going to be cutting in and shooting on your stronger foot, even though you're starting from your, say if you're a right footer playing the left wing, you're able to cut in, shoot with your stronger foot, even though you started from your weak, you know, your alleged weaker side. So just meaning that inverted wingers are generally used to attack the box with shorter passes and wingers and wide forwards that are going to shoot, not cross. fullbacks are a different story. You know, obviously, unless you're playing some really attacking style, although Fabian Johnson did get the goal today on a lovely little run, generally, you know, you're not going to get fullbacks cutting in and dribbling at defenses into the center. So, you know, obviously those guys tend to hang outside, you know, a little more and pump in crosses. So this one, like I said, I'm not sure what the thinking is with the inverted fullbacks, unless it's, you know, Klinsmann trying to be cheeky in case there's Portuguese and German scouts, and, you know, maybe he's thrown in a few roster wrinkles that aren't actually going to be used. But I don't think that's the case. But like I said, however, with that said, I'm not sure if that is the case. I'm not sure what the thinking actually is in using inverted fullbacks, because that's definitely one that I'm not a tactical genius, but I'd like to think I know a little bit more about tactics than most American fans. But yeah, this one I'm not sure what the thinking is, because like I said, I haven't really seen inverted fullbacks before.
No, he did this in Germany as well. He's the one who, you know, inverted Philipp Lahm famously, playing him on his opposite foot, and that turned out pretty well, I'd have to say.
Well, but I'm saying, usually when it's used, those fullbacks hang deep, and it's more of like a defensive maneuver. So like I said, in terms of like how it's going to then be used into a tactic of going forward or on the counter, like I said, I'm not really sure what the thinking would be.
Yeah, and I don't think it is. Now, some people asked us on Twitter what we thought, and the only thing I could say is that, like you said, playing inverted fullbacks, they're going to naturally stay a little bit narrower to stay on their, you know, their more dominant foot, and so maybe he's doing it to tighten up the back line. That's about the only thing I could think of at this point.
Yeah, because it depends on because if he is worried about something like that, maybe that's the thinking, that maybe if the fullbacks stay tight, it's going to narrow, or it's going to allow them to cover runs from the channels a little more, which, you know, obviously then the impetus on covering the flanks would be on, you know, the guys like Zusi and I just drew a blank, but the guys that would be tracking back from the midfield to cover the runs on the outside.
Mm-hmm. And so the problem is, and in soccer, you see this a lot more than other sports, to where, you know, you kind of know. In other sports, you kind of know what the instructions of the other player is, because, you know, they're set plays. But in soccer, being so fluid, we really don't know what Klinsmann is telling his back line in terms of how to, you know, when to get forward, when to drop back. And obviously, we're not going to hear them say that, because then that'd be giving their plan away. So I'd be really interesting to hear what he has to say to these players behind closed doors in terms of this.
Yeah, because especially like you said, Chandler. I don't know if Chandler's ever played at left back in his club career. So like I said, to then, and if it has, I'm sure it can't be more than a handful of games. So to then play somebody like that in a, well, they're all key positions, obviously, but to play somebody like that in a key position that's going to be, you know, facing some pretty stern opposition in the group of death, you know, just to throw him there a few matches before the World Cup starts is, to me, that's a much bigger risk than, you know, leaving somebody like you-know-who at home. I avoided it, yeah.
Yeah, good job. But now, if you do check out 2defyanks.com, I did blog yesterday about the back line and it coming into focus. And I have done the research now. Fabian Johnson actually does play inverted for his club at Hoffenheim.
And he played, well, see, there you got it.
He played 14 matches there at the end of the season and did fairly well with a Who Scored rating of 7.01, which is pretty solid. And
it's a comfort thing.
And then, but Chandler, I'm doing this off memory, I do believe he played 21 matches for Nuremberg this season in the Bundesliga, all on the right side. So I could verify that he did not play on the left at all during this last club season. And it should be said that Fabian Johnson is making the move to a bigger club. Well, yeah, they're bigger. In Mönchengladbach.
Yeah, bigger summer. Than Hoffenheim, yeah.
Yeah, they're bigger.
Yeah.
Definitely. And that which is a former club of Michael Bradley, or am I getting some crazy FM story arc into my head?
Yeah, no, that was... yeah, he moved to Mönchengladbach after Heerenveen.
Okay, thank you. I was just running. I was like, oh, hold on. Was this one of my crazy FM universes where, you know, where,
yeah,
like where Bob Bradley manages Man U like in yours? No, okay.
Yeah, no, in my FM universe, little Bradley just left Mönchengladbach. But yeah, it's been like 3 or 4 years since he left Mönchengladbach in real life.
Yes, okay. Good. All right, now since we're talking about the back line here, Corey, a lot of people, and by a lot of people, I mean the knuckleheads on ESPN, we're going on and on about inexperience on the back line to where the four projected starters on the back line, which now include Johnson at right back, Cameron in center back, Beasler at center back, and then Chandler at left back, have a combined 0 starts in the World Cup. And they're saying that this is a weakness for the U.S. men's national team. So my question to you is, my question to them is, who would they rather call in? Who can we call in at this point in time? I mean, your best players are your best players. And I think Klinsmann's identified his best players. Now, to me, it would make more sense to flip Johnson and Chandler to have them play on their, you know, natural sides. And then I think you'd have a more solid defense. But exactly, what do these guys want?
Well, obviously, they want a cello and a Bocanegra back line again or something. But yeah, the experience, I think that it's a little overplayed because, I mean, it's not like these guys or most of these guys haven't had tournament experience. And that's the main thing for me is to get that tournament experience because it's, you know, it's obviously just a different environment of being in a club where, you're going to be traveling around different cities throughout the year where, you know, obviously at a tournament – you'll be traveling and sometimes greater distances, but you know, it's a much more concentrated environment in terms of practice times and all that stuff. So with that said, like I said, to me the big thing is more tournament experience, not necessarily which tournament experience, because again, the World Cup, and you know, if you bring everybody experience, you know, you're going to show up, everybody's going to be 34, 35 on the roster, the way in the US pool, I am also one of those people that you can't really plan for something like World Cup experience anyway, I think that's something that experience in most sports tends to be overplayed anyway, because you know, if a veteran makes a mistake, you never hear the phrase "he made a veteran mistake." So, like I said, that's the kind of excuse that I think it's more of a non-footballing nation or a developing football nation excuse. If we're to take ourselves seriously as a footballing nation, that's the kind of excuse we need to get past, because like I said, I don't think you can really plan for that. And at some point, you know, all those guys have to retire anyway. So at some point you're going to be with an inexperienced back line or inexperienced midfield or whatever anyway.
Yeah. You're never going to go into a continual cycle to where you have experienced players all the time, just the way international football works. I mean, it'd be great to have Tarundolo there, but you know, injuries say otherwise. It'd be great to have Bocanegra there, but he's broken down. He's older with injuries. Same thing with Gooch. He's old and slow now. About the only person I could say who has a gripe to be in the squad would be Goodson. But he's on the slow side too, and it seems like with the way Klinsmann picked his squad, he was really focusing on foot speed.
Yeah, and Goodson was one of those guys that was really dangerous at set pieces. So, you know, we may lose a little bit on the set pieces, but yeah, I think, like you said, that I think Klinsmann was basically targeting trying to get not only just a little bit more speed, but more athleticism across the back line too, because Goodson, like I said, I'm certainly not a Goodson hater by any means, but you know, I wouldn't ever call him an athletic center back, which, like I said, I think Cameron and both Beasler have a little bit more natural athletic ability too. So, like I said, I think it's not just a question of speed, but I think just overall agility along the back line too.
Mm-hmm. No, that is definitely true. So, to wrap up this, with the two games you've seen so far, what position battles do you believe are still open? From the looks of things, I would imagine that Fabian Johnson is pretty well entrenched at right back. And that left back, you still may have a question of who starts between Chandler and Beasley. Beasley didn't get in the game today. And then you have the question marks, I think, on either side of the diamond, on the left side and the right side, with Bedoya, who played in the first game on the left, and Davis today. He wasn't great, but he's one of the few naturally left-footed players that we have on the squad. And on the right, Zusi wasn't all that impressive again to me. He did have a nice cross, I do believe that was him, into the path of Julian Green.
Yeah, that was Zusi.
Mm-hmm. And he couldn't bring it down, and he was in a difficult situation, and Taylor Twellman was ripping on Green. And we could talk more about Green here if you want to, but what do you think, what position battles may still be open as we head into this final match against Nigeria?
Yeah, I think, just to address Zusi real quick, I think Zusi is going to be the starter. I don't know if Klinsmann, because both Bedoya and Zusi, you know, are arguably better going forward, but I think Zusi is a little bit better in tracking back, so I think Klinsmann's going to lean towards Zusi. Zusi's going to start because I think he's a little bit better defender than Bedoya, so that's just what I was saying. And I think the two position battles that are still open would be the left back and then the left side of the diamond. Although I think before the send-off series, I would have thought Klinsmann was leaning towards Beasley to play left back, but I think as we get close to the World Cup, he's had a rethink, and you know, having Beasley try to mark somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo would have been a disaster. So like I said, I think that's another reason why maybe he's going with Fabian Johnson recently, is to, even though he's wrong-footed or weak-footed at the left-back position, you know, he's still going to be a much better natural defender than Beasley. And then, like I said, with the left midfield position, I think that's still open. But again, as you alluded to, I think with Davis being naturally left-footed and especially being a really good free-kick taker, I think he's going to lean towards him too. Although, like I said, I do think that position is still up for grabs.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I haven't seen Klinsmann's post-game thoughts yet today. We'll have to track those down to see what they asked him. And the media really doesn't ask him too good of questions. So, yeah. So we got one game to go in Jacksonville.
Yeah, which... Do we ever get accreditation or
against
no?
Against Nigeria, and we have news on that.
Oh!
Are you ready?
We're going to have our first on-scene reporter.
Well, I will be at the game no matter what. I do have a ticket, so I either will be in Jacksonville at Everbank Field as a U.S. Men's National Team supporter in the American Outlaws section, or there is still a chance that I may be there as podcast personality.
Oh.
Our application has been upgraded to pending.
Ooh. Interesting.
So I don't think that they deal with these things fully until the week of the game. So I'd imagine tomorrow I'll hear if we are approved or not.
At this point, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I hope that we are approved because it would allow me access to interview some players, which would be great for us to have. And the press conference as well. I'd be able to sit in on that. So.
And you could maybe taunt Grant Wall in person, which would be...
No, that would be highly unprofessional, and I would never do that.
Dang it. Okay, well, I'll, that'll be left for me.
So, but yes.
Yeah, at this point, I'm kind of picturing the selection process of Sunil Gulati just pulling names out of a hat while blindfolded.
Yeah. That could be the case. So we'll see. I'm not too optimistic, but we haven't been rejected yet.
So you're saying there's a chance.
That's right. And so it'd be a great experience for me to be able to do that. But we'll see. So that's just to let everybody know, and I'll tweet this throughout the week, but I will be at the match. So if anybody who listens to the podcast is going to Jacksonville, I will be sure to get in touch with people, and I'd love to, you know, have a beer with some people at the, especially at the AO tailgate, which will be before the game. Now, obviously, if I'm there as a reporter, it's going to limit my beer intake, if at all. I'll probably be drinking water, because I'll have to maintain a professional thing. But who knows? You know, I've never been there. Maybe the reason all those guys are psychotic and they do a terrible job is because they're drunk half the game, too. That's possible.
Tell them it's all part of the daft style.
Oh, boy.
Well, you want us to be deaf, pour the liquor, Charlie.
That's right. So I will be in Jacksonville. If you're going to be in Jacksonville, track me down on Twitter, at @2daftinks on Twitter, and we'll see if we can meet some people. It'd be great.
Yeah.
All right, I got some stats for you here, Corey, some new stats hot off the presses that I just calculated.
Oh.
And this has to do with winning percentages for U.S. men's national team managers.
Ooh.
Now, Klinsmann, with the win today, upped his U.S. record to 30-11-8 since he has taken over, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
That computes to a 61% winning percentage. And that is above both Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena.
Oh, blaspheme.
Bob Bradley finished his career as U.S. coach at a 53% rate, and Arena at a 54% rate. So Klinsmann's at 61%.
Yeah, and a 60% winning rate at international levels, I don't care where you're from, that's nothing to sneeze at.
That's really good. Now, granted, we're in CONCACAF, but still, we have a fair amount of wins over Europe, and as we talked about before, I think Klinsmann already has more wins over European opponents than Bradley and Arena combined.
Yeah, and our first European win in almost 20 years or whatever it was. In Europe, I mean.
In Europe, yeah, that too, but in terms of just European opponents in general, Klinsmann's done very well. So, all you media people who hate him, stop!
Yeah.
61%. Man, if Klinsmann's name was Jurgen Klinsmann, let's see, if his name was Joe Klein, and he came through the MLS and was a manager for the Columbus Crew and went on to the U.S. men's national team and got a 61% win percentage, UCLA, yeah, you'd be creaming your pants.
Yeah.
But because he's foreign, you hate him. And this sounds, see, now we're just like, maybe we are truly a football nation.
They took our jobs.
We're just like England. They're complaining about all the foreigners in English football.
They took our jobs.
But that's the only reason I can think why Klinsmann doesn't have full support is because he's foreign. It's the only thing that makes any sense.
Well, that and some journos are forever going to be contrarians, so whatever's going on, the sky's always falling, you know what I mean?
Well, I know, but it was never that way against Bradley when the sky really was falling, to where, you know, every match we gave up a goal in the first 10 minutes. That happened for years, and nobody was going crazy.
Yeah, okay, well, then in that case, I don't know then.
Isn't that true?
Maybe Bradley was hacking in and rewriting articles, who knows?
Maybe it's revisionist history on my part.
Yes.
But it just happened over and over and over, and nobody really pressed him on it. Like, why is this happening? How come you haven't fixed this?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe more people actually care now. So.
And that could be the case, too. So now people are nitpicking.
Yeah.
And we're used to winning because that's what we do here. It's all about hashtag winning. It's all about Charlie Sheen winning.
Yes. Second place is the first loser, Ricky Bobby.
Yeah, so. So, all right, that's all I have on our agenda today. I don't know if you have anything else you would like to speak about, because we actually do have a few minutes here before we get kicked out of the TDY studios.
Not really, because I think we're going to cover the guitar bribery on another show, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. It's going to be a busy summer.
Yeah, and that obviously does fall in the no shit Sherlock category, so maybe,
so, you know,
maybe
that
there'll
maybe
be nothing to report on.
There'll be a blog for you, I think, this week, if you want to get your thoughts out of that.
Yeah, other than that, you know, my obligatory Arsenal propaganda with the Arsenal ladies winning the ladies FA Cup today.
Oh, really?
So we pulled off the FA Cup double.
Does
yeah.
anybody really care about that, may I ask?
The Arsenal ladies do.
Okay. Well, I thought you were going to say what? Now we must be up to, 16 days or something without a trophy?
Oh, yeah. It's 2+ weeks, I think, now. It's intolerable.
And Wenger signed his contract extension. Did he actually sign it? Like, I heard that he signed it. Did he actually sign it?
I think so, but he might have signed it verbally. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, he signed it.
Okay, so he's back. So that was interesting. We speculated about that a few weeks back. And I think he may have it had to do with transfer money. No, if you listen to the reports, no, I still don't believe, you know, the numbers.
Well,
Klinsmann. Wenger's got $100 million to spend in the summer. I'm like, no, that's not going to happen, people.
Yeah, people, cash reserves and transfer budgets are different. But, yeah, apparently the sticking point was actually 2 years versus 3 years.
Well, he wanted that extra year.
Yes. Well, because originally he was supposedly only wanting 2 years, but now he wanted three. So, I don't know. The scuttlebutt behind the scenes is that, you know, now that he's won a trophy, he's kind of gained a little more confidence in wanting to rebuild or, you know, to continue to work on the project of rebuilding the side or, you know, continuing to evolve the side. So 3 years over two. So, like I said, apparently that was the actual sticking point, was that extra year.
Interesting. All right. So there's a few minutes on that. And then just for equal time, because I'm the host of the show and I could say this.
Pochettino.
Yeah, that's right. Spurs have hired Pochettino. Mauricio Pochettino from Southampton. So he is the new gaffer for Tottenham. And
the new future former gaffer.
Yeah, well, everybody gets hired to be fired.
Yeah, well, no, I just...
So, but
Spurs
hopefully...
Fire more.
He got a 5-year deal, so hopefully that is a sign from Levy that unless we're getting relegated, that he's going to stick with this guy and give him a chance to build the team in his vision, because that's the problem.
Call me a gooner, but I'm taking the under.
Yeah, well, probably, but I would like to think that he would get most of that contract. And we'll see. It's up to him in the end, really. Well, no, it isn't, I guess.
Yes,
it's not up to him.
It's actually up to Levy.
Yeah, who freaking knows? And there's a good chance that Levy may not be around. He might outlast Pochettino. Or Pochettino may outlast him, sorry.
Interesting.
That's my theory, that once the stadium gets built, that they will sell, because that's what they're waiting for.
Cashing in.
And then that's when the, I don't know, what Middle Eastern oil-rich country doesn't own a club yet?
That's a good question.
I've heard there's a big money group out of Kuwait who's looking for a team. Maybe that will get Kuwaiti owners.
Yeah, I thought that Kuwait team was looking to buy, I thought it was the German club or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, Spurs are on the market, I'm sure, so maybe they'll do it once the stadium's built. Anyway, so we will get more into new manager talk later. We'll do our new manager special as we did last year. To where, remember, Corey, not to pat ourselves on the back.
No, go ahead and do it.
But in the new manager special last summer, if you do remember correctly, we lauded the hiring of Pellegrini by Manchester City. Bam. Bam. EPL champions, first year. Because he knows attacking football. And what was the manager who we said, hey, this may not work out?
Man, we do a lot of talking. I don't remember.
It was David Moyes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember we predicted David
Somebody
Moyes
to
would...
pick from, though.
Yeah, that's true, would not succeed. So we will have a similar talk. There are still some... Are there any EPL spots still open? I'm trying to think right now. I think they're actually all filled.
Yeah, I think they're all filled because Villa, since they're staying up, I think is keeping Lambert.
Yeah, they announced that. Yeah.
Monk re-signed, so yeah. Swansea's done...
Mm-hmm. And Sunderland kept.
Well, it would be the Southampton gig because Pochettino left.
And Southampton, yes. So there are still slots.
I think everybody else settled.
So after the World Cup, we'll be sure to get into that. We'll have our new manager special. We'll talk about the new managers, including those who are on promoted teams, to get you more familiar with them. So that's going to be great. And I'm already looking forward to that.
Unless Liverpool's just going to buy all of Southampton outright, since they're looking at.
Yeah,
like six of their players.
Liverhampton or Southpool.
Yeah.
Southpool sounds better.
You'll never walk alone in St. Mary's or something.
Southpool. I like that. And they could keep red, too, see?
Yeah.
It's like an MLS dream. Consolidation.
Oh, and creating franchises out of thin air.
Yeah, all right. All right, we've been babbling here at the end. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week, hopefully, after the Nigeria match, and then we'll be ready to talk about the World Cup in the whole. And hopefully, as I said, if I get those press credentials, I'll have all kinds of juicy morsels to share with you. Isn't that right, Corey?
Yeah, there you go again. Get me excited. Juicy morsels, gravy, boudin ball, just... I think I'm going to hit a buffet after the show.
Awesome. Get some of those little smokies for me.
Yeah, and the reindeer hush puppies.
Yeah. All right. For Corey Chatelain, I am Chad Smith. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We will catch you next week.
Yeah, TDY to the top.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.